everyone. Welcome to the Qualitative Research SIG podcast. I'm Jessica Lester, the current chair of the Qualitative Research SIG. I'm pleased to be joined today by Payal Shah, who will be sharing with us insights related to participatory and critical methodologies in relationship to research in schools and schooling. Payal Shah is an assistant professor of educational foundations and qualitative inquiry in the Department of Educational Studies at the University of South Carolina. She conducts critical ethnographic research on gender education and development in India. Payal has over 15 years of research and professional experience working with NGOs, policymakers, and the social and educational sectors in India. Through her research, she seeks to problematize the linear narratives of education, empowerment, and international development. Specifically, she investigates the education disempowerment link by examining how institutional form impacts and individual narratives illuminate the social processes that both define and characterize disempowerment. Her research explicitly opens for examination the black box of schooling, exploring the notion of empowerment in the lives of marginalized females, students, and teachers. It seeks to investigate the narrative of schooling as the ultimate key to process development and equality. Payal's belief in the emancipatory potential of research and desire to ensure that her research supports social justice and locally desired change serves as the basis for her commitment to participatory and decolonizing research. She has published across the fields of international and comparative education, qualitative inquiry, and women's and gender studies in such journals as Comparative Education Review, International Journal of Education and Development, Gender and Education, Feminist Formations, the International Journal of Qualitative Studies in Education, and within numerous edited volumes. Payal, welcome, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Jessica, and thank you for inviting me to participate.
So to begin, might you describe the place of participatory and critical methodologies in generating insights in relationship to schools and schooling?
Yes. So in my research, I seek to open up the black box of schooling and investigate what actually happens within schools. With this orientation, I focus on gaining insight into the lived experiences of both students and teachers. And when I do this, I espouse an epistemological orientation that privileges the experiences of these so-called marginalized girls, these individuals who are the recipients of development and education-related interventions. Epistemologically, I also believe that girls, apart from being grouped with the homogenous kind of grouping of women, deserve explicit attention to their unique needs, circumstances, and their contributions to the development process. Therefore, I see girls as agentic and competent social actors and not as passive recipients of dominant discourses, hegemony, and socialization, but that they instead have important insights from which we can learn. Given these epistemological commitments, I seek to engage in research methodologies that are both critical and participatory to act both as an analytical heuristic to help investigate how these girls make sense of their educational experiences, but also as a modest means towards using the research process to support the empowerment of my participants, of these girls themselves. To me, shifting the power from the researcher to the participants so that participants are able to gain some control of the research process and control how and when they share their experiences impacts not only the depth of insights we might be able to gain in relation to schools and schooling, but also fundamentally alters the dominant flow of knowledge, where knowledge is produced, shared, and legitimized, often by the researchers and not the participants themselves. So to me, critical and participatory methodologies can provide a concrete way to challenge the often neocolonial and dominant narratives of development, education, and schooling, and can be used in efforts to kind of decolonize the research and knowledge production process. On a more kind of personal and individual level, I strongly feel that the power of critical research is the fact that it is relational. I believe that participatory methodologies provide the opportunity for us to build meaningful and long-lasting relationships with our research participants so that the work that we do as critical researchers no longer, as Richa Nagar stated, makes our participants the subjects of the sob stories that we seek to tell. I feel that as someone who works on educational issues in the global north, but is deeply rooted in the global, works on educational issues in the global south, but is deeply rooted in the global north, that it's my responsibility to provide an avenue through which other perspectives, voices, and experiences can be heard, mm-hmm. and who can meaningfully participate in the knowledge production process. And so I see participatory methodologies as one potential avenue, although not without its issues, but one avenue through which I can work towards this goal.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned briefly, not without its issues. Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges of this kind of work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are numerous challenges. Some of them are broad and structural, and others are very kind of individual and logistic in nature. So I think that some of the bigger challenges to doing this work is related to issues of resources and time. You know, doing kind of participatory and critical research requires spending a lot of time building these relationships with your participants. Oftentimes, a lot of this time doesn't directly produce the quote unquote outcomes or products that as academics, we are often tasked to produce. And so this gets at the kind of larger structural issue in terms of what types of products or outputs are expected with kind of quote unquote good rigorous research. You know, what are, as academics, how are our reputations built? What types of journal articles or book chapters are we tasked to write? Whose voices are represented within those? What theories are legitimized when we're doing this type of research? They often are not ones that are produced by our research participants or produced within the global South. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of really thinking about the ways in which our participatory research can be legitimized, you end up having to do oftentimes double the amount of work. And many times the actual participation of your research participants gets lost in that process.
Mm-hmm. So Payal, can you share a little bit more broadly about how you have drawn upon these perspectives and methodologies in your own research?
Yeah, definitely. So in my research, I feel like I'm still really just beginning to explore the possibilities of participatory research and participatory methodologies. My first experience with participatory methodology came out of my dissertation research, where I used photo voice methodology as a way to renegotiate my relationship with my participants and provide my participants, these middle school girls, a platform to share their experiences and insights. Some of my more recent work builds upon these insights that I gained from engaging in participatory methods and has enabled me to do longitudinal work with the participants of my dissertation research. So I've been able to follow them over the past 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the midst of working on an 8-year longitudinal ethnographic manuscript. And it was because of the relationships that I built with my participants through participatory methods that I was really able to, I think, build these relationships and gain insight into their lives in ways that I would not have been able to. So building on some of those insights, I'm actually in the process of developing new projects that actually seem to be much more participatory and decolonizing, from project development through data collection, analysis, and to the dissemination of findings. When I talk about photo voice, probably a little bit more later on, my use of photo voice was as a participatory method, but it was not a broader participatory research project. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to do kind of in the next stage of my research is actually do a project, a full project that is participatory. An example of one of the projects that I'm working on is built upon a partnership that I have cultivated with one of the oldest and largest women's NGOs in Western India. I've been working on and off with groups within this NGO for 15 years. And so I've been working with the state director of this organization to develop a participatory project working with the NGO grassroots workers and community members to design and implement a project that's really coming from their needs, their interests, and their desires. What we have come up with is that the organization has just completed 25 years of existence. And so we are seeking to explore how women who have participated in the past 25 years of this organization's programs conceive of and articulate their educational experiences and how this impacts their notions of self and their role in the family and community. And this idea of this broader role in the family and community was something that really came from them, working with a variety of individuals within the community, including men, women, community leaders, elders, religious institutions, and children, to gain this broader, holistic, and intergenerational understanding of the schooling empowerment social change dynamic. So this is something that I've been starting to work on for 3 years now, and I'm hoping to really take to the next step this coming year. But it's an example of also how much time it takes to try, and I have no idea if this is going to be successful, but at least try to engage in a broader participatory project.
That's a really helpful example. You mentioned when you were describing it, this idea of engaging in work that's decolonizing from the earliest stages or beginnings of the project. For listeners that might be really new to this idea of decolonizing orientations, can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I have another kind of example of maybe hopefully a helpful example to help us think about that. So when we're thinking, when I conceptualize decolonizing the research process, it's really focusing on two primary areas. One is the knowledge production process. So thinking about who is it within a research. So one, it's thinking about research as collaborative and as a partner, as a kind of a broader partnership. And then if you're thinking about that partnership or these relationships, who within the project is playing a role in producing knowledge, whose knowledge is being legitimized and valued through the research process. And in more kind of traditional qualitative and even critical research traditions, the researcher plays the primary role in, you know, they may be using the experiences, the articulations of of their research participants, but they're the ones mostly engaging in the analysis process. They're the ones that have designed the project. They're the ones that you know, eventually write up and disseminate their findings. And so thinking about this whole process and trying to make it more balancing the power between the researcher and their participants and the legitimization of knowledge, decolonizing the process means kind of trying to even out those power hierarchies. And so one of the ways that I think about this, particularly as somebody who does research in quote-unquote developing countries, is the primary role that the West has played, or that the global North has played, in terms of not only producing most of the theorization and research and scholarship, but also being this kind of implicit frame of reference. Everything is always compared to or made in reference to, whether explicit or explicitly, norms, values, knowledge produced in the West. So thinking about ways that we can look at notions of tradition and modernity, not in relationship to the West, but actually focusing on the lived experiences and articulations of people in the Global South as a means of understanding these concepts in and of themselves, not as just larger processes of larger and linear processes of development.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. So going back to something you talked about earlier, you've written quite a bit around photo voice as a method of empowerment. Can you share a little bit more around what photo voice is, and also around the connections you see between photo voice and empowerment?
Yeah, definitely. I mentioned that my first experience with participatory methods occurred during my dissertation, which was a 2-year critical ethnography of a public residential school for girls in Western India, the state of Gujarat. Mm. And in this project, I employed photo voice methodology as a means of engaging with my participants in a different way. And actually, the reason that I turned to Photo Voice actually came out after many months of working with my participants and literally failing. I was not able to engage with them and collect data in the ways that I was hoping to. My dissertation project was centered around illuminating the experiences of the students, these middle school girls themselves. I wanted to gain deep insight into their lived realities, their challenges, their struggles, and their conceptions of schooling. After about 3 months of traditional ethnographic fieldwork, which included participant observation, interviews, focus groups, living with the girls, I found that I was not making any headway into building any sort of relationship with them, not to mention then getting them to open up to me in any sort of meaningful way. So I realized from a very panicked kind of graduate student perspective that my dissertation was on the line here, but also feeling this real sense of failure that for the first time, you know, it wasn't working. Something wasn't working here. And I needed to really drastically rethink the research process. I needed to come up with a way, and this was very clear given the larger, the very kind of hierarchical cultural context within which I was doing my research, but I needed to decenter my power and I needed to very much rethink the role that I played as a researcher and put a lot of that aside and instead focus on building a relationship with them that was built upon mutual trust and respect. So that's when I decided to engage in Photo Voice activities. My advisor had used Photo Voice before. She had kind of suggested to me that I should think about Photo Voice or arts-based participatory methods as a way of engaging in research. And so luckily I had these ideas and I had done a lot of this work already ahead of time. And so I turned back to that literature and decided that I was going to try Photo Voice. And Photo Voice is based on an old method that's been employed within visual anthropology of photo interviewing, where photographs are used as a part of the interviewing process. What I decided to do in my use of Photo Voice was that I had the participants themselves take the photographs and then select the images which they wanted to use, which we then used as a stimulus and catalyst for dialogue. So individual interviews as well as broader focus group interviews were all based upon the photographs that they selected and the stories that they felt that these photographs illuminated. And so I used Photo Voice as a way to place the direction of my research. I gave them very broad kind of prompts and had to do some training on how to take photographs. And we had to do a couple of different rounds just to get, you know, numbers of photographs developed and for them to feel satisfied with that they were capturing what they wanted to capture. And so in this way, I used Photo Voice as a way to place the direction of my research in their hands. And I sought to infuse my research with reflexivity in terms of power, representation, and voice. I also used Photo Voice as the primary way to adhere to my epistemological commitment that I mentioned earlier, where I want, you know, I seek to use research as a way to challenge the notion that these girls are not merely learners of their own culture, but competent social actors who take an active role in shaping their daily experiences. By providing them with cameras, I wanted to provide them a vehicle to illustrate and then articulate their present lived and collective experiences. So, you know, I think the second part of your question, you know, how do I see Photo Voice connecting to notions of empowerment? This one experience with Photo Voice, I think, was very insightful. And, you know, not only was I able to really build these deep, meaningful relationships with these girls that I mentioned earlier, enabled me to continue working with them for the next 7 years. But I was very much able to get insight into how they conceptualized and articulated their educational experiences and their conceptions of what it means to be a girl, what it means to go to school, what it means to be members of their communities. And so in this way, Photo Voice definitely acted as an insightful analytical heuristic. And I was able to understand these kind of theories of empowerment a little bit more deeply through their articulations. So I think there was that kind of theoretical insight that PhotoVoice was able to provide me. But I also found that PhotoVoice had an actual empowering component to it in terms of the ways in which the girls benefited from engaging in the process. Mm. Through the individual and focus group discussions that we had, and we had many, many of these. The PhotoVoice project, I did the PhotoVoice project over a 7-month period. So we were able to really engage deeply, mm-hmm. do a couple of different rounds of taking photographs and having conversations and then going back to taking photographs. I really felt that there were these communicative spaces that were opened up where the girls were able to really share their experiences and in ways where they weren't just being asked a question and responding, where I was not able to get anywhere, but instead they were able to talk about personal stories and experiences and relate, you know, these images to other issues within the community. And very organically, these conversations, these very kind of abstract, almost theoretical conversations, mm-hmm. were able to be had, but it came from them when they, you know, from their own perspectives in their own ways. And they also felt expressed to me many times excitement at being part of this mm-hmm. project. They felt, you know, we can't believe that you are, you know, letting us use these cameras and taking these pictures by ourselves. And they felt a lot of ownership over their photographs. Mm-hmm. And they felt very proud of their stories and their experiences. And I could see their confidence and ability to articulate themselves grow throughout their engagement in these, you know, what I call communicative spaces. But the kind of larger way that I saw the process contributing to their empowerment happened through their expressing their excitement about having these photographs. And their constant question was, could we take these, will you give us these photographs? Will you give us these photographs so we can take them home and show our parents and we can show our family members that we took these photographs? Mm. And so we talked about, well, what do we want to do with these photographs? And I shared with them potential ideas, one of which could have been, did we want to hold a public exhibit of their photographs? Mm-hmm. And they decided that sounded amazing and that, mm-hmm. you know, they love this idea that people were going to be able to come and listen to them and see the photographs that they took. And so in working with the teachers, we decided to hold a public exhibit, combine it with a parent meeting. And we invited all parents, community members, and educational administrators in the area where the girls were able to share their photographs. And so each girl was able to select one photograph that we blew up and framed, and we created an exhibit around the school. And the deal was that the girls had to run the exhibit. So they were in charge of explaining what this PhotoVoice project was, what their role was in that, to start off the exhibit. And then they stood by the photographs and got to explain the photographs so that it wasn't just these images being left for individuals to consume on their own, but the actual intent and the stories that the girls wanted to tell were a part of the ways in which these photographs were being consumed. And they just, you know, we had debriefing sessions afterwards, and you could tell throughout the exhibit process that they felt really proud, and they felt very happy to have engaged in that process. Mm-hmm. And what was, you know, insightful about the process, not only was in the debriefing sessions them saying how happy they were and how they can't, you know, wait to talk more with their family members about how they felt about the exhibit, but that after the exhibit part was over, a broad community-wide discussion was held, which was led by the teachers, that talked about girls' education and talked about these girls' futures, their lives, the values that parents have for their girls. And the girls were present for this conversation. And this was highly unusual in this context. These types of conversations weren't had. And so I think for them to have been able to hear the ways in which their futures were being negotiated and discussed around them was a very insightful process for them. Surprisingly for me, they were quiet throughout this discussion. They didn't speak, which was the absolute antithesis of the way that they had started engaging with me throughout this process. And so part of me felt a little bit disappointed that maybe, you know, take them out of the safe space of the school and maybe nothing's going to be different, right? You know, how did we know that this actually is going to influence broader change in their lives? And so I sat down and I chatted with them, and they, you know, were shy at first, but then they looked me in the eye and they said, we couldn't speak. Like, this was completely inappropriate. It would have been completely inappropriate for us to speak up to family members or to insert our own opinions. She's like, if we had done that, they would have pulled us out of school, or they would have shut down the school. They're like, the best thing that we could have done was listen. And now we know what they're thinking and how they're feeling, and we wouldn't have known that otherwise. And so what, in thinking about, you know, being really impressed and shocked by that revelation, I realized that their silence actually represented a much broader kind of meta understanding of the broader effects that demonstrating their empowerment could have on their, you know, on their larger context. And the fact that they tailored their actions in the moment to reduce negative effects on the school or on their lives really represented an understanding of the importance of context and their recognition of the importance of context in exercising their empowerment. Mm. So to me, it gave me insight into what it really means. One of the dimensions of empowerment that is theorized is this idea of recognizing their marginalization and the ability to confront that. Well, they clearly recognized their role in this larger context, and they were also savvy enough to start to recognize the ways in which they might be able to actualize some of these, their new ideas or understandings without putting themselves at risk. So to me, it was quite an insightful process that would not have happened without, you know, engaging in this broader Photo Voice project, I think.
What a powerful, powerful example. Pyle, I'm sure that our listeners may be interested in learning how they might more closely follow your thinking and writing. How might people follow your work or get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I have a faculty webpage. You mentioned I'm at the University of South Carolina. If anybody's interested, they can just visit my faculty webpage at www.sc.edu and search for me. And on my webpage, I have, you know, my research interests and CV and also email address and whatnot. So if people want to contact me, I'd be more than happy to speak with them.
Great. Well, thank you, Pyle, for sharing more about your work and your methodological and theoretical thinking. It's really been a pleasure to learn from you today.
Well, thank you. And thank you again so much for inviting me to participate.